First thing on the agenda is to do some introductions.
I can do that with HIV Health Services, Bill Palmer, Columbia Cantu, here. Positive Resource Center,
here.
Project Inform, Wade Flores, Mary Lawrence Hicks, ALRP,
here.
DPH Population Health Division.
Yeah.
Lee Jewell, absent. TJ Pete Foundation.
Here.
HIV Prevention Council. Rachel Mendel Young. Alliance. Ken Pierce. City Planning.
Here.
Charles Serrano.
Here.
Chip Spanish.
Here.
API Wellness Center. Project Open.
Here.
And I'm Mark Moore, Council Staff.
Allie Cohn, Council Staff.
Jen Kuss, Council Staff.
Okay, so we'll move on to reviewing the draft agenda. Does everybody have a copy of that?
Good to go.
Okay. All right, and how about the minutes? Or you minutes?
Just a tiny spelling. Page four, the bullet point halfway down, CM Pierce, starting with CM Pierce. That last line under the sub bullet where it says CS Molnar, which of course caught my eye. Nothing can move forward until a continued dialogue happens from the PH.
Oh, okay.
Reviewed its initial set date for the annual summit as being on September 5th. There was a lot of pushback on that, council members. After discussion, the committee decided to stick with September 5th as the date of the full council summit. So that should be at the Pi Center from 10 to 4. We'll be starting a little bit earlier for breakfast. All members of the public, particular members of the group are certainly welcome to comment on
so I'm actually leaving HP the end of next month, but the organization would love to continue to participate, and we'll have a one of my peer colleagues who will attend if that's okay. So, and I was a little unclear about whether my attendance initially was a non-voting member, but whether that had changed or anything, or what our presence would.
I think actually we'll be discussing that on agenda item 7. The group will need to change, and there's a lot of different ideas. And the change in the group might actually involve changing how this group is set up.
And even the voting structure.
Okay. So I will be gone, but IHP would love to continue to be represented. So.
We know that you've been there for many years.
15 years, 2 weeks, and 3 days. Long time.
Hours.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Where are you going to?
To be determined. Working on that. So maybe I can announce this. HP, we're facing some budget difficulties, like a lot of places, and. The details and implications of which are being worked out, and we're likely facing layoffs of some of our clinical staff. So we're working on some contingency plans, and we'll ensure that client care will not be impacted in too great a way, although we currently have the demand for our services exceeds our ability to provide them. So it's gonna have an impact, but we will figure it out. And it's unclear as to how many staff will be laid off. So, and so part of my decision to leave was out of this situation. So there'll be certainly more details next month. But
how do you expect those will get rolled out and communicated to providers and clients alike?
Yeah. Well, once. It's figured out exactly so what the plan is and staff impacted and programs impacted, then we will communicate it. We will inform the community and all our partners about how these layoffs potentially may impact services. But we first need to have a plan approved by the university, then the folks who are impacted are informed. There's a 60-day period before anything can happen. So there's plenty of leeway to kind of figure out how to do stuff, but until the individuals are informed, we will wait to inform other folks. But it'll kind of roll out in the next couple of weeks. So we will keep you posted. But tough time.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
August 29th.
Seen, but there are two of the new hepatitis C drugs that are added to the formulary for ADAP. Some really good news, very high cost medications that have been added to the formulary. This is a prior authorization process that needs to happen, but and also I'm working with UCSF CAPS on recruiting patients for a study that specifically looks at people who have had to transfer their care to a different clinic or have had a change in provider or health insurance coverage as a result of the Affordable Care Act. So I have some flyers here that I can pass around. It's basically a one-hour interview with someone over at CAPS. And there is, of course, a small amount of compensation for that. So I can pass these around if people have people who are personally impacted or if they have clients that might want to have their voice heard to help identify some of the outstanding issues. And, of course, we have another way for us to highlight the challenges. Other announcements? Okay. Move on.
So we started our new contract year July 1st. We did get the okay to continue providing services as we are, so we still continue to refer clients over to me. We're still waiting on hearing back about expanding. We are cautiously optimistic about it, but it might be a while before we get any official word. So for now, things are as they have been, and still seeing the same trends, still seeing the same issues. We're halfway through the year, this first year of implementation, and it doesn't seem like there's been any change for the better in terms of getting people signed up, having people not fall through the cracks, and getting their insurance paid for by OAHIP. So seeing basically all of the same issues. But that's pretty much it in terms of updates. So everything is sort of reported as we go along.
How many would you say you've gotten, I guess, during the period since we last got updated?
For the last contract year, which is really, really 3 months, we counseled 36 clients, and they range from just, you know, one-time consults all the way through, like, full-on representation, appearing before Cover California administratively. So, but the numbers that we're counting is 36.
Okay. Do you think those numbers will stay steady? I kind of imagine.
I think so, if not increase. You know, and there's a lot of, we get a lot of phone calls from clients who are, or people who are not HIV positive, but, you know, still answering those questions for them, and those aren't counted as clients. So I do feel like it's going to stay the same or increase, especially by the end of the year, I think, when the tax penalties start rolling out. So I can see a lot of problems with that.
So this is, that's one of the issues that you guys are going to start taking on is figuring out the tax penalties and making sure that those are just and people have to face them.
It is something that we're interested in. You know, at this point, we don't have a lot of specific rules or guidance from DPH. It's pretty much so new that they're pretty much giving us a lot of leeway on what we can or cannot do. I personally am interested in how that is going to work out. So I think I would like to help clients with that issue.
And of course, we're starting to think about open enrollment.
Exactly, coming up.
For this next round, which starts,
I think, November.
There's going to be a whole another round of issues and potential changes to plans and brand new enrollments.
And we'll see if there's any change in terms of the providers. You know, I talked to a lot of providers who just have been having issues with the insurance companies. A lot of them are choosing to opt out of certain Covered California plans. So I'm curious to see how that is going to play out too at the end of the year, if providers will end up not accepting certain plans or not.
Have plans haven't been announced, any changes to plans haven't been announced, or new people entering, new organizations entering the marketplace, have those been announced at all?
No, it doesn't look like any of the plans have changed, or anything is new going forward in the next year. There's been a couple of lawsuits out against some insurance companies already, so we'll see how those end up impacting insurance companies in the future or coverage in the future.
Yeah. Thank you.
So.
Okay. So moving on to next steps. You know, we talked around a little bit if we wanted to talk about the San Francisco Essential Health Benefits for HIV patients first, or if we wanted to talk about next steps first. And I think that we, part of our motivation behind wanting to talk about next steps first is because it includes the possibility of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, of changing the structure, changing how this group works, and changing membership, changing came up when we were discussing putting the agenda together. And so it, we of course came to the conclusion that talking about the next steps was the right thing to do first, as you can see from the agenda. But of course, if people have different opinions in it and feel that it would be more important to talk about essential health benefits, I'll be like, so we would approve the agenda at this point. So probably should move forward on next steps.
So I hadn't really appreciated what the differences would be between a work group and a task force. I can certainly appreciate the importance of everybody who is players in this process being on the same page, providers, the planning council, the Department of Public Health, any other organizations that we could get to buy into this concept of an essential health benefits package. I think that's a worthy goal. So I wasn't sure what was envisioned by kind of joining with, for instance, the HIV task force, what that would mean.
So maybe we should start with talking about the difference between a task force and a work group, and then perhaps, Courtney, would you be willing to give us kind of a lowdown on what the HIV Health Reform Task Force was kind of charged with and what the outcome was? How does that maybe be a helpful education process for us all?
All right. So currently this is a work group. A work group is, in our policies and procedures, is really seen along similar lines to committees, except of course they're ad hoc, they're based around need. Because they are mentioned in our policies and procedures specifically, connected in structure to committees, they follow the same rules around membership, quorum, and voting. The council has also had, I guess you'd say, spin-off projects, often done in collaboration with other entities. The task force is probably the major one. Task force does not submit to council rules around quorum or membership or all those things. Courtney will talk more about the task force in detail, but both entities have basically fulfilled in some ways what they were initially set up to do. However, there's so much more work to be done for both. So I think the idea of merging the two is one the group should consider. And if they do consider that, one of the things you might want to consider is actually making this a task force rather than a work group, so that we no longer need to adhere to the council setup of this group. The council set up this group so there's a parallel number of providers and council members. If we go more toward the task force structure, any council member and any provider really is welcome to come and attend and add their voice to the mix. We have to figure out what to do around quorum and voting on issues. The group would have to decide to whether it wants to do a simple majority, whether it wants to do a shared consensus, all of that. But certainly if the group decided to merge, this group would have to decide whether it would like to adhere to the work group structure. Could be a challenge. For example, there would only be one voting member between TJ and Courtney, because they both represent the foundation. Or if they would like to adhere more towards the loser model of the task force. So maybe if you could just talk about where we're at right now with the task force.
Sure. So the task force was formed almost 2 years ago, I think, and it rose out of conversations we'd all been having, but I think primarily with the Planning Council and with Happen and with Ann and I, just at the state level, about really needing to have a focus on how healthcare reform is going to be implemented in San Francisco, specifically for people with HIV. And we pulled together just sort of representatives from different, I think it was pretty open, but we tried to make sure we had people from representing different groups to really come together and look at how should San Francisco implement healthcare reform with people with HIV in mind, and are there opportunities there that we should take advantage of in terms of, if we could create our best model of HIV care, is this an opportunity to really take advantage of, increased insurance coverage on one hand and looking at other services and trying to come together? I think similarly in intent, at least that I understand it, a essential health benefits group to be looking at. Like, you know, in some ways we felt like healthcare reform was coming on us and we had to react, but we were like, is there any opportunity to spin this and take advantage of some of the opportunities? We didn't end up fulfilling that part of the original goal because it ended up just, we pulled together, got some funding from the Blue Shield Foundation, and ended up creating a pretty lengthy document that had our recommendations for San Francisco implementing healthcare reform. We also did a series of trainings for people with HIV and providers around what implementation meant for benefits. We did a couple fact sheets. We did we did do some case studies on other areas that have had to transition people from Ryan White into new payment systems, and you know what worked and what didn't. And that all officially ended as of December, which is when our, although I think it lasted a couple months, my involvement ended in December when I went out on maternity leave. but our formal group ended with our Blue Shield Foundation grant ended. And since that time, Jolene's been more active than me, but I think that the group has continued to meet with the hope, desire, intention to sort of monitor how implementation is going, problem solving, where, you know, I think a great example is last, I guess it was December, when we found out by accident that none of the DPH clinics were contracting with any of the covered California plans, even though all the DPH clinics had been telling their clients to sign up with the Chinese Community Health Plan. So we found that out, got that information to Bill, and then tried to problem solve what are we going to do for making sure that clients, A, get that information, B, can get out if they need to, and then we came up with a solution with Healthy San Francisco that they can stay in Healthy San Francisco. So that's, I think, just one example of the type of work that we've had to do, which I think is a little bit more representative of sort of ongoing work. I would love, you know, ideally, this group would be able to also sort of envision more in the spirit of this, what I understand this work group to do. We're envisioning sort of a best picture of what this HIV services could look like, but I also think that the Healthcare Reform Task Force, and I welcome your input here, has sort of a more focus on, you know, problem solving and some advocacy and trying to make sure that we're getting information from what's happening to clients at either to the state level or to the DPH level at the city, and that where people aren't losing access to care, that people are sort of being maintained as best possible. And so we've been meeting again once a month after the Happen meeting, but have not had as great participation, I think, as we would really like. And we knew that you guys were coming to sort of some sort of potential close of at least your formal work product. And so we thought it was worth at least exploring, is there sort of, it seems like we have similar at least goals, and is there room for merging, and does that even make sense for what we want to accomplish, what you guys want to accomplish or not? And so I sort of wanted to come here and put that on the table. But obviously, if we decide it doesn't make sense, then it's no hard feelings. I think, hopefully, on either side.
I need to have someone. I'm for continuing the work group, either as a task force or a work group, or merge. But what were we looking as our broad goal, this group?
The group with
for the future, not what we've done, but what we.
There was no broad goal for the.
There was no ongoing goal
for the group. The group had one goal, which was to be part, be in pretty much the community process that led to a recommendation to the council. So that was completed. However, fairly early in the process, Bill first brought up the idea of why don't we also weigh in on an essential health benefits package for San Francisco. That idea certainly had a lot of resonance for, I think, everyone around the table. And I think people, including, you know, myself, started seeing this group as having objectives that went beyond that one particular test. So right now we're in kind of the same gray area that the task force is.
are, like, their funding has completed. Well, I'm on the task force as well, so that our funding has completed, and our goal has been completed. So I don't think both groups should now end. There's too much to do.
Is there a lot of shared membership?
There's a considerable. Yeah.
I've been going to meetings.
And on. Okay.
I mean, in that sense, it might make sense to merge, since we're both in a gray area at the same time. We share membership. We are talking about the same sorts of things. And
okay.
Yeah, I think I can see that working out.
I think the thing, as I was hearing, the difference between work group and task force, which I hadn't really appreciated, is it seems like we're more of a task force, just because, I don't know, we don't have as formal of a process as you guys do, and I don't know if that benefits or not. I think the other, I sort of tend towards the task force thing, just because that's what I'm more familiar with, but sort of leave that up to you guys. I think that the main thing that we would feel is important is the ability to do advocacy. So I don't know how constrained or not you guys are by that.
If it's advocacy, I'd answer that. If it's advocacy that is talking about how to continue maintaining a system of care, particularly in the face of cuts from Ryan White Part A, that's absolutely allowed.
Right.
We cannot lobby directly towards the government officials for an increase in funding for our particular agency that we work for or are consumer for. At least we can't do that while working on ourselves as council members. However, council leadership is almost always, if not council leadership, then, you know, council members and or council staff are always a part of groups that go to the mayor's office or go to supervisors to say, hey, guess what's happening? This is a problem. Can you help us work on this? So that would certainly continue to be allowed because that's allowed at the council level. Mm-hmm. As far as I can see, the task force actually has never really done any specific lobbying efforts to get an agency more money.
Yeah, no, ours has been
so
more
that
about,
be an issue.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, more like the example I gave where if we, like, we found out about the DPH clinics and then
Well, the council has actually signed on to many advocacy efforts, particularly at the state level, saying that the council believes that this should happen with this funding stream,
right.
Or the council doesn't agree that this is happening to ADAP.
Right.
So that kind of advocacy is certainly allowed.
Well, and certainly these recommendations are certainly a form of advocacy as well. I mean, so this is, you know, quite available to the general public on the web, and
that's a joint group between the council and HAP. I mean, I can, as a director of the council, I can be the initial group. So I think it's totally within the abilities for the council to do that. As long as it doesn't go over that gray area, and I don't see how.
I don't think so either. I just am not as familiar with.
It's a great line. It can make for certainly an interesting discussion with our HRSA program officer around these kinds of things. Lobbying is such a complete no.
Right, and we didn't do specific. We didn't do technically lobbying. It was more, you know, holding DPH to the feet to the fire a little bit on some issues that.
Yeah, for sure. That needed to be seen. And but HRSA also likes that. HRSA likes the idea that the council is actually keeping track of the things that impact the system of care and taking a proactive stance to make sure the system of care stays sound. Our program officer likes hearing examples of how we're doing that.
Yeah. So I kind of saw the essential health benefits package as kind of a discrete task, of kind of very much along the lines of what Andy drafted for us, which I really appreciate the time and energy that you put into that, because that was very much along the lines of what folks had happened. I think we're looking at in terms of kind of breaking down what services we want to see included, and then kind of layering on that how we want to see the services provided and what some of our values are. So I see that as a, you know, a very short term work oriented project where we get a document, and then that document is something that we use as part of our advocacy, and so we use that as part of our educational efforts with the Board of Supervisors and the mayor, and we, you know, we tell the mayor thank you for making your commitment to make sure that funding continues for HIV services. This is the system of care that we need, and we need you to continue to support that. what I heard from about the task force was more of kind of a problem solving around larger issues around implementation. So that there's slightly different purposes. I see this project as a very kind of time limited, like we come up with a list, we get happen to endorse it, we get the planning council to endorse it, we get other allies to endorse it, and then we use that as part of our ongoing education and advocacy efforts around funding.
Okay. Mark, did you have
about the essential benefits list?
Okay. So I guess we're still more a little bit on the next steps.
Right.
I just want to speak to that, Bill. I mean, I think that the first step is creating, a Bill of Rights, and then the second step is to ensure that Bill of Rights is followed through through the body that created that, through advocacy efforts and through coalition building and through speaking to the executive board of civil rights, et cetera, and systems of care as well. Talking to them and ensuring that they're also understand that this is the expectation that these bodies have. So I see it more as like one step, the first step, second step, rather than being once essential health benefits kind of statement has been finished, then we just need that there's a follow-up on that. Is that?
Yeah, but I don't know that the follow-up is the same as kind of the problem-solving around the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So maybe I'm not seeing that connection as clearly.
Yeah, and am I allowed to speak? Sorry, I don't know.
No.
I mean, that's what we've been doing, but that's certainly not what the intent of the task force was, right? The intent of the task force, and I don't have our mission in front of us, but it was like, what is sort of an ideal system of care in San Francisco? And this is clearly like successful implementation of ACA and ensuring that people with HIV have access to all the services they need through ACA is kind of a critical component of that. I can see both sides, well, not their sides, but I can see both things. Like, I can see that this is just a finished document and that's done, but I can also see that this is a finished document and how do you get this to happen? And I think making sure that ACA is implemented in a way that doesn't harm people with HIV or, on the other side, that it actually benefits people with HIV is a critical component, not the only component, but a critical component of making sure that this gets done. I'll just be frank also, I think that the work that the Healthcare Reform Task Force is doing or is trying to do is really important, but I don't know how much longer we can sort of limp along. And so I think we were hoping that we could take the momentum that this group has built up and sort of could we just join forces and really try to drive that forward. It seems like there's similar membership. It seems like there's sort of similar intent and,
Mark?
So,
yeah, I just in some ways echo Courtney was saying, and to respond also to Bill's idea that this is a task. I just think this coming year and a half or so, is going to be a very challenging one. There's going to be a lot of different things happening to providers, a lot of different challenging things happening to consumers. I think there needs to be a group in some ways that actually hears those things and reacts to it. The task force might be an ideal place, but the task force has lost a lot of its steam because it accomplished in some ways its major goal. Our numbers in the task force seem to be dwindling. We brought new blood in, but we've missed I don't know how many meetings this year, and it's been like 5 or 6 meetings canceled because no one shows up. And I think this is way too important of an issue. These things are too important of an issue for us to say, let's do an essential health benefits list, and then that's it. I think that's an amazing idea. I think we need to have it. I think it's a perfect tool to use for advocacy. But I think during this time period, there still needs to be some sort of body that connects a community council with a lot of stakeholders from providers and government to be responding to all the things that come up on such a regular basis. So that's why I see the need, absolute need, for some sort of body to continue, whether it's this group or the task force, but to continue in a robust way, interested way. I mean, not that the task force is not interested, interested. But.
And I think the task force has committed, I think we've committed to continuing. We just wanted to see if this was an avenue to help continue more successfully, or if we should just continue on our own. So it's not an absolute either or. I mean,
until it becomes like a task force tete-a-tete.
There's also a very practical issue of your administrative support ended at a certain point, and so we're very fortunate to have administrative support with this task, this group, work group. So,
I just sort of see the advantages of the members here, their background, their experiences, and their knowledge in helping the task force accomplish some of their goals. Like, some of our goals is to see what issues there are after the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, and all of us as providers or council members have that experience. So once we're aware that there is a particular issue, then the task force can say, well, we can bring it to the attention of the state level, working with Ann Donnelly, who is trying to bring these issues to the state level, or another issue that we had talked about was fixing some of the administrative problems with the Medi-Cal office here in San Francisco, and that's only because as providers we saw the need for it because we have the experiences through our clients. So that's the advantage that I see of having members of this group merge with the task force.
So I'm fine with merging it if you think that there's, administrative support that the task force would get, and that I don't know that I necessarily want to, go to, ongoing meetings around the development of the document. I'm interested in developing a nice little, concise little one-pager that we can use in our advocacy efforts, and I will be involved with those advocacy efforts in a variety of forums, but I might be interested in participating in kind of the ongoing troubleshooting that seems to be happening for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And as long as the structure that we're moving to isn't going to be unnecessarily unwieldy or in some way restrict what this final document would look like, or present some decision-making structure that's more complicated than what we've got now, I'm fine.
So it sounds like there are kind of two issues on the table, one which is join forces or no, and the other one is that what is the focus and what's the duration. About what is the focus, that would be helpful to hash out a bit before we say go ahead and let's merge.
Sure. I mean, I think it definitely should be a question posed to the group that will be a vote if you want to merge with the health reform task force.
I have a question. Before we get into the discussion, do Courtney and Jimmy and our members who are in the task force, are you able to sort of weigh in? Or is there another step that you have to go back to the task force meeting, even if you only meet once in a month, that's going to be?
Well, that's a good question, because anything the group decides will actually still have to go to our steering committee.
And I feel like if, I don't know how many members are there, I feel like I want to, should we make an entity thing, or should we maybe have another ad hoc meeting where we just, because I feel like if we're discussing, it's going to be one-sided if there's just a few task force members here. Unless you're sort of like the better that you represent the task force.
Holy is not here, obviously.
Well, there's four members here at the task force, and this group also includes, is there anyone taking here in the task force?
She should be here. She was.
So this group also includes an additional three other people. So there's a total of seven members, as far as I can see.
And the co-chairs of the task force are Lee, Michela, who's leaving, and who is it?
Mike?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin from DPH.
Kevin,
he is. Yeah, but he hasn't.
He's still been on a late pass.
Okay. So, I mean, I think I didn't actually know I was representing the task force. I thought I was just coming to participate in the conversation, but.
I mean, at this point, we have a majority of the task force members here.
I have a sneaking suspicion that the task force is going to say, yeah.
They already, I mean, certainly both Ann and Lee have been saying, let's please do this.
Yeah.
It's good to clarify. Yeah,
absolutely.
Chuck? Yeah. I think it's a good idea for a joint meeting of the task force and the work group to answer the questions that not sure on the table, because as you said, you thought you were just joining this meeting, you weren't representing the task force. I would feel better if those joint group would come together and see what is the focus and what is the mission and what the voting rights and the responsibility of the members. And so my preference is actually to join because I have not been able to go to the task force and I thought that it was just limited. It wasn't open to the public. I didn't know that. So being on the council and being in the council leadership, I think this is a good way of not only outcomes and advocacy for the council. I think it would be a great thing that not only local and state and could be national that we see as this is what we see as a system and model of care in San Francisco, and this is what we want to adopt.
So the only other person I feel like would have to, I mean, Anne's on leave of absence until September. So
and she's already weighed in that she feels like it's something that she would like.
Yeah, and Lee said as well. I just thought Lee was going to be here. I guess that was my misunderstanding.
No,
he's at Comic-Con.
Oh, but I'd like to get a picture of that. But yes, he's very prone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, yeah. Lee and you, Jolene, I've been going. Mary Lawrence. They've all been prone.
Yeah.
Joining the two bodies.
I mean, I think there's also opportunity to create new mission, purpose, and vision. I mean, I don't think that, you know, obviously we accomplished that task and now we're sort of trying to see what we become moving forward. The only piece, like I said, that we feel like is really critical and maintain is that advocacy piece and the ability to be that kind of voice. So as long as that's allowed, then
just trying to fit this all into the scheme of what's happening now with the care council. I mean, because we're talking about merging there, and where do we, how does this fit into, does the care council suddenly make this one of its subcommittees or at work group?
Oh, yeah, we actually discussed that before you came in, because there would be a big difference between, well, let me just catch up on what I said. If this continues as it is, as an actual work group, so it adheres to, of course, our policy and procedures around work groups, the task force is like only a few other different bodies that the council helped, but not solely create. And so it actually doesn't adhere to our various work group standards around quorum, around all of those different things. So merging this group, two bodies, would also mean a decision from this group on whether you want to actually go more towards the health reform task force role, I mean, structure, or can keep this one, which could actually be very, could tie some hands. In the light of a merged council, if we choose the work group style, I think there's going to be a lot of questions as far as, well, how will that work group now look under the policy and the procedures of this or that? I think if you keep a task force, it still in some ways remains its own separate but connected thing to whatever body the care council turns out to be.
So, and understanding that concept, isn't this simply the task force inviting the members of this work group to join them individually rather than this having to be, I mean, what I think I've heard is that some people want to take some time to see how much time is it going to involve, what are its goals, how do I fit this in? An invitation from the task force for this membership of this group to join them. It seems to me then that solved most of the issues.
In some ways, because this group has vaguely but ambitiously given itself a new task. It's a time, as Bill sort of went over, it is sort of a timeline task with an actual product. So this group doesn't just now evaporate because we did our recommendation to the council. There's still this essential health benefits list that it sounds like the group wants to get involved in. So yes, after that's completed, certainly the group can just be invited by the task force to come in. I think the question is, do we want to even wait for that? Do we want to do that now and just say, this group is now dissolved as a work group and is now actually the task force? That's kind of a big question, but I think it's something the group can itself determine. It goes, again, to steering to, of course, uphold that. And would, I suppose, theoretically go back to the Health Reform Task Force to uphold that. But since, as we've heard, the members want it to happen.
But if it's simply an invitation to the members here, why does it need to go to steering and care? And it seems to have a greater stability by going as an invitation and an acceptance.
Yeah. So you even skip that whole part.
It seems like we're getting so caught up in the bureaucracy of how we do this check and we do this check. If the task force is recognizing the benefits of what people on the work group have to offer and offers them to become involved.
Yeah, and so in some ways, like one of the issues that I brought in the beginning was, in some ways, this sheet, like this is a very specific structure of 7 to 8 providers, I think, and 7 to 8 council members. Providers are represented, not individuals. I would love to, in some ways, see this is, we don't need to deal with this anymore. The task force doesn't deal with this. It really is, membership really depends on what, like who's there and who is actually able to connect to the topics that we're talking about. So I kind of love your idea.
I have a couple of questions. We go that route. Does everyone on the task force have a vote?
Kind of did it by consensus, didn't we?
Yeah, it's never been an issue. There was the three executive members, so it was a provider, the council member, and the DPH was sort of how we had representation. So they were sort of charged with deciding and whatever that phrase is. If people weren't there, they were the three that had to make the ultimate decision. But we were much less formal than this, so it hasn't been an issue.
My other question is, would council staff be giving administrative support in such a case?
I think so. Yeah, we've actually already been using council staff for at least one task force meeting. Thank you, Jen. So I don't see why we would continue that. I'm not sure I want to actually provide administrative support for two spinoff groups that kind of meet in an ad hoc fashion. But certainly one, I think it's key to what the council does in some ways.
But doesn't it also beg the question of what's going to happen with the county? Was there other support for this?
Well, we didn't have a grant. We had a grant, so we were able to pay Harder & Company.
So this year we have not had administrative support, and it's been a lot more difficult.
Yeah, so we have members taking that minute and putting them together.
So, I mean, I think it makes sense to merge the two groups, and a task force seems like a far more easy structure to work and get as many voices at the table around different issues. Also, I'm sure all of us would like one less meeting on
sounds like, based on what Ken is saying, if we decide to do that, then the group actually might vote to dissolve itself while also receiving what I think we can say is an invite from the task force. We do have a majority of the task force members here for you all to join us. And so then we move the essential health benefits list directly to kind of the newly formed, newly reformed task force. Does that make sense as far as what the next step will be?
I would think, given the way to do it, isn't it just easy to agree that we're going to merge? And then, of course, you can merge, but that doesn't mean I'm going to join. You're going to have to ask me anyway.
Yeah.
But if there's some method of demonstrating support by virtue of us agreeing to merge as a group, it seems to me, you know, even if it's, you know, it really doesn't mean anything, but what it says is that these two groups recognize the mutual benefits and the focus. And the memberships have their own, I mean, the individuals have their own right based on their jobs and support and blah, blah, blah.
And so rather than dissolve, actually, there could be a motion that says to merge the group, the essential health benefits work group, with the health reform task force and to adhere to the health reform task force membership and task force structure.
So it doesn't have to go through all care.
Exactly.
And with the recommendation that the essential health benefits be the first order of business on the task force.
So, before you go there, wouldn't that need some kind of approval from the council, because this is a work group with the council?
No, because this work group completed its scope of work. It did. It completed its mission. For the undead right now.
So, and this might be jumping ahead, but I'm just kind of curious, what would this task force be called? Would it still stay the healthcare reform task force?
Keep it that. Call it the essential health benefits task force. You can call it the whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, no, I'm just curious.
And for a time, it doesn't. I mean, I think we assumed it would mean coming to this meeting, but there's a better time.
Yeah, we'd probably just figure that out via a doodle. What are the best times?
Any other comments on this?
So I moved whatever it was that I was part of starting the show.
you moved to merge the essential health benefits work group with the task force and adhere to the task force membership
format.
And structure.
Right.
And format, perfect. Format. And you're seconding that?
Second.
So, I don't know if we can do a roll call. We need to just show the
name. Yeah. All in favor?
Some people didn't vote, and I don't know if that's an indication that they perhaps don't want to be membership.
Oh, no, Courtney didn't vote because she's not a voting member, actually. I'm not a voting member either.
It sounds like the Health Reform Task Force is sort of the broader term, and that the essential health benefits kind of planning is one of the tasks that they will consider. So I think it makes sense to just continue the name of the known entity, and then one of the products that we will do is help to come up with this I like the idea of a two major, very concise, you know, very much along the lines of what Andy did up for us, and Happen is working on at the same time. So,
so the son of the return of the health reform task force strikes back.
How about just ride of?
Isn't that the son?
Are we onto the document?
I think we are.
When will the military protection? When will we be?
I think
that'll be
that
the task force that I'm responsible.
Yeah, well, I think what we'll do is we'll also send a doodle out to the members of the of both groups, really.
Here this time.
I like this time.
I like this time. You guys don't like close chapter?
No, that's 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the email that I put together and Holly sent around was just that these two pages are just basically speak to, you know, all of the essential health benefits that we discussed during our time together, and then on the second page, I just tried to capture some of the issues that were behind this, the kind of execution issues and the kind of values issues. That were behind the delivery of these of the what we would potentially consider to be the essential.
I think they actually might not have the updated version unless I have the wrong version, but I'm not seeing the changes that were made on here.
I haven't turned it off. Here we have a direct machine we can see.
Yeah, that one should have food on it.
Yeah,
like a social, mm-hmm. Mental health and social safety. Yeah, so that's
at least two.
So ignore the document before.
So this is just an earlier version.
Yeah, it misses out. It misses a handful of important. Yeah.
Sorry about that, folks.
So I really liked what you did in just the simple listing of the services and referencing whether they're down as an Affordable Care Act essential health benefit or Ryan White or none of the above. I think that there could be some grouping of things, and I don't know whether we want to do the kind of model of the core services for Ryan White and the supportive services, but something like that. I think that there should be like a very brief introduction that kind of lays out what we think we mean by an essential health benefits package or the San Francisco model of care. And then I really like what you were starting on. We were very much on the same page, which is kind of the values, the how we do things. So, you know, the cultural competence, all of the how, and that could be a checklist as well, or it could be a little bit of a narrative to capture all of that. But some of these categories are also very large, and like prevention is down here as like, you know, that's a whole world, you know, but I think it more and more it is part of the whole system of care as we move to the test and treat model.
Mm-hmm. And biomedical prevention.
So I had a few other things to emphasize and to layer in on the how, and I confess that I don't have my notes from what. When we met with Mike on some of the other things. But for instance, housing, I think, is a really crucial thing, and I would love to find a way to emphasize the central role that housing plays in stabilizing people with HIV and the idea of housing as healthcare. I think that one of the ways that the Planning Council has prioritized serving especially vulnerable populations through these centers of excellence and kind of this intensive support for targeted populations is an important thing to pull out as well. I think that there is a value of community-based services and volunteer driven services that it speaks to the San Francisco model of care, how we respond to community needs with community resources. I'm trying to think if there were other things that I wanted to pull out. Those were some of the things.
Thank you. Mark. So I think one of the things that that the council has reacted to over the past over many years really has been a movement, it's not more than a movement, it's been a mandate from PRSA, particularly just in how it renamed Ryan White, the Ryan White Treatment Modernization Act, a mandate from PRSA to really look at services as more important and less important through this false binary of core and support. I think that's been a world that we've had to live in because that's what PRSA has dictated. That's how we have to really configure our system of care. We have to do it on a monetary level as well, the 75-25. I would love for this group to consider looking at creating its own model of care rather than one that's simply based around core versus support, because I think in some ways that's a hand tire.
Yeah, and so I wasn't doing it in terms of making relative values of importance, just in terms of organizing the services.
But do you see how that becomes, like, if this becomes a tool of advocacy, then anything that's not under the word core or anything suddenly becomes, like, a
margin. I totally get what you're saying. I was just trying to see, and we I was struggling with this and one of the reasons why I like the list that Andy came up with was because it's a good list, it's comprehensive, and it has all the categories, but to the extent that there are groupings where we can make similar things grouped together, that's all I was suggesting. I don't want to de-emphasize anything. I want just like you, I want to be able to say that this is the system of care that we need. These are all important services. These are all essential.
Kevin?
So I'm over here whispering to Chip now. Where does Medicare come in there? Where does some of the other programs that are not necessarily Ryan White or affordable care, if we're talking about a whole system of care, and at the same time I'm thinking more than I just making it, it's going to be unwieldy if it gets broader, but
no, I think if you're seeing a service that's missing, this is a time to...
Not so much a service, but in the parentheses.
Oh.
This is covered by other than just Ryan White or affordable care. And there may be things that don't jump out at me that some other service provider who's not affiliated with Ryan White or not affiliated with affordable care is providing that we may want to list on here as well. I mean, I think we tend to forget that everything isn't about Ryan White. But that there are other service organizations that are providing for services here in the city and just not us.
Yeah, so we would, the general fund is not listed, and we know that mental health is getting funding. I'm sure that you guys are getting funding for client services that are receiving mental health services that are not, it's not coming from Ryan White dollars.
Through Medi-Cal, indirectly Medicare, and general funds, and then SAMHSA.
So I wasn't thinking of this as kind of listing all the funding, I think that this was more kind of teasing out what the service categories are and what are listed as essential health benefits under the Affordable Care Act. And Ryan White, in that little intro, in that little couple sentences that I see, the idea is that Ryan White is just one part of the service delivery system. We don't really care who pays for the services. We think these are the essential services and the city needs to ensure that they are provided. You can pay for them with city general fund dollars, you can leverage Medi-Cal dollars, you can do whatever you want. This is our bottom line. That's how I was seeing that intro.
So, actually, Mark.
It goes to Mark's point a little bit, to your point, or somewhere in between. In an ideal world, it would be nice to understand what the primary factors are that inhibit an individual from adhering to or to accessing services and address those factors in a bundle rather than provide a list of items that may be prioritized by different people. So take a more internet clinicians in this room to understand if there are a few or more factors that keep someone from accessing services or adhering to their or continues that adherence. So why would we address those as the bundle, as the core, not person here, but not to exclusion of other things, but let's try to approach this scientifically with our population rather than providing a list, if you will, have a stronger recommendation of what the core should be, what the essential elements are. And that does by its nature rank others. It just does. But maybe that's at least in our experience at Open Hand, that is certainly the case. There are essential benefits that make a larger difference.
I was just wondering if or why premium payments more generally wasn't included. So you have Medicare Part D premium payment and ADAP listed, but I know people have trouble paying for copays and premiums beyond Medicare Part D. And I know some jurisdictions, for example, are paying like OAHIP, they're paying some of the premiums up front before people get on OAHIP. So I'm just wondering what the conversation was around that, and if there's a reason it wasn't included.
I think that this is just purely a baseline document to work from, and then as things like that are pointed out, we will consider them
okay. And
add them in.
So I would suggest something around sort of cost sharing assistance or premium payment or something.
Cost sharing assistance? Call it that.
So Mark, what were you looking for, like a grouping of the services? I wasn't totally sure where you were going with that, because there's definitely some services that are listed here that I think people would view as less essential than others, and we are kind of putting them all on the list and calling them all essential. So
yeah, that's what I'm suggesting is that there's enough evidence in our community that more broadly that there are a select number of highly impactful services that keep a person or give a person access to services that keep them healthy. And that's how we should start. We should be bold about it, we should list it, we should back it up with data. And then there are secondary services that are important but not critical. Because there's only this much money, and so we can't have everything on the list. And if we are the experts in this, then we should be making a forceful recommendation on what the primary bundle is.
I just think, while that's a great idea, we also need to have landmines involved in that, because it's certainly become a very political discussion, because by excluding certain programs, you were excluding or raping them.
I would also say, though, that to some extent, the point that you're making is more relevant to the discussion of revenue streams that are declining, like Ryan White, and the challenges of figuring out how we are going to use those declining dollars. I was actually seeing this as an opportunity for us to lay claim to city general fund dollars, which while they have gone down in the past, and I'm sure they will right now, aren't, and we should lay claim to as many of them as we feel a rich city like San Francisco has to offer. So I was feeling less constrained about kind of making the scarcity argument up front with this document.
When I talk about limited dollars, it is about, at least from our perspective, it is about a responsibility to be effective and efficient with what dollars there are, limited or not. So
that sounds good.
So it wasn't a reaction to the decline in buying white. It was a reaction to...
I think that could be part of the value statement, part of the how we do stuff that...
I think sometimes, and you're right, there's its political minefield to start to say some are more important than others, but we do that every day, either in our own actions or in the reactions to funding, not always in the best way, but we have enough, I think we can choose to make a stand and demonstrate where the right bundle is from all that we've learned in the last 30 years.
Sorry, where the what is?
The right bundle of services. And that's not easy, but I don't think that means we don't have to do it or that we shouldn't bring that force to bear. But I think it's about recommending the right thing despite the funding structure. And then the funding structure informs how we go forward.
Not speaking towards that topic, but more towards, I guess, looking at this list and seeing if there's things that need to be added or merged. I just have some questions, I guess, for you, Andy, or for the group. So I see home health care and home and community-based health services. From my understanding of those two service categories, they're essentially the same. The only difference is a degree of licensure that's needed for the service provider. Does the group feel okay with, and do you feel okay with merging those two, for example? Those are two separate ones on Orion White, but again, they're separate because of specific licensure.
And that's why I think giving this for everybody to react to is an opportunity for us to go back to our offices, think about this, come back to the next meeting, see if we see any logical groupings so that it's a more manageable list and not overwhelming to the decision makers that we're going to be using it to.
Well, to continue with my point, like I saw a lot of connectivity with what Courtney mentioned, as well as other areas around, you know, drug coverage. You know, I'm not sure whether those should those all be separated out, or should those all be one line that somehow includes ADAP and prescription drug coverage, or all of that. I don't know. Just like home health and home and community-based health, should those be combined? Should we include things that have been defunded? The main thing that sticks out in my mind is complementary therapy, which I do know many, many clients still really use as a life-saving tool or a life-enhancing tool. Should we include that? There's a lot to really take a look at as far as how can we tighten this list up while still remaining fair to the wide diversity of services that, depending on the client, a particular client can say, this actually saved my life, or that saved my life, you know? I want to be fair to every single potential of what could be a part of the package while still making this a document that you can give to someone that's a one-pager that people, that say a supervisor can actually understand.
Just to Mark's point, are we looking at itemizing all of these separate things, or are we looking more at kind of theoretically and based on research, what does someone need to do to stay healthy, and what do we have as an expectation that people will receive who need it when they need it? Me is kind of like a larger question that I've been struggling with thinking about this.
TJ?
Yeah, that sort of dovetail on Mark's comment and Andy's comment. I think we definitely need to figure out a way to how to monitor this, because I see this list as sort of evolving as the population ages. And I would really like us to figure out a way to do that, whether it's a needs assessment every couple of years, or, you know, we need to know how much of the population is going to be 60 in 2 years and how much is going to be 70. You know, because my one thing that always sticks out to me is transportation. I can just see those needs growing as the population gets older. And it would also be impactful in another way. If somebody goes, you know, I'm not going to take the 3 buses I need to take to get from my neighborhood to General to go to the Center of Excellence there. I'm just going to stay home, and then finally they get so sick that they have to be taken to an ambulance or emergency services, and then, you know, I just can see that blowing up big time. So, and also, I think it's important that, you know, there's no current funding mandate around transportation, and that we really need to figure that out.
Mark? I was just going to suggest that because many food agencies and outside of San Francisco, because we're the primary one in San Francisco, don't bundle nutrition, therapy, and food. And then if you do bundle it, it may become restricted to smaller organizations that can't rise to the level of dietitian required for nutritional therapy. So separating those two may assist others in this work. It's fine for us because we do all that work, but smaller agencies who do food may not be able to meet that standard. And so there's a very clear standard for medical nutritional therapy. It's an expensive process. So food by itself might be easier if you, it's not what we do, but it might be easier if you for a smaller agency.
Okay.
Can I kind of have a quick question? What was, you said 08, but there was another phrase that we.
Cost sharing?
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Ken?
So my aging brain is having some trouble because I feel like we're going in directions and we're not answering perhaps some of Mark's questions. So is this truly an essential list, or is, as you're suggesting, no, it doesn't do us good service to not have it as comprehensive as possible if we're going to try to maintain funding that's already been there. But in the meantime, I'm, you know, because I'm thinking back, complementary services was something that used to be a huge issue, and it suddenly got cut and left behind and is rarely brought up anymore because of a legislative mandate from Ryan White that they don't count these. So I need us to come back and tell, are we doing essential and, or are we doing broad-based? And if we're doing broad-based, then there's no problem putting food and nutrition together, you know, but if we're doing, you know, so that's where I'm at, I guess. I need a sense of where we're going.
And with that, I mean, you know, I also think about, okay, well, the ACA set out essential health benefits. One of those, for me, as a gay man, it includes, you know, maternity care. And as a gay man, it's not an essential health benefit for me, but it's part of the larger package that has been set down as essential health benefits. So that kind of concept, I think, comes in to this as well. So I appreciate the comment, Ken, and I think that's the discussion that we need to have. When the Affordable Care Act had the essential health benefits, they were very broad categories, and there was a lot of opportunity, both pro and con, to those broad categories could be fine if they were filled in all the details that we wanted, or they could be a huge problem if they didn't fill in all the details that we wanted. So that's the balancing that we're doing right now, so that we come up with a document that is short, sweet, succinct, hopefully defensible, as compelling and as essential as we can, you know, make the case, and not so much of a laundry list, and not so much of a watered down list that it becomes ineffective.
Yeah, I've been thinking along these same lines as what's essential for everybody as opposed to what's essential for anybody, and which criteria are we going to use that might help us shave off here or there. But the broader issue, I think, is that we should have a social justice slash whatever San Francisco model of care that we aspire to, and then we should have one that we're fighting for, areas that we're fighting for. I think this agrees around this table. We can't have everything we'd like, but we can certainly advocate and fight for what we truly consider essential. And by essential, I'm assuming we mean without it, health outcomes deteriorate. Is that a good criteria, or is there some other that we should use? And do we need to be able to prove it in some way? If we're asking for money?
Yes.
Those are my thoughts.
I don't know whether I'm disagreeing with you or not, or just trying to look at it in a different way. I like the idea of collapsing services so that like services are grouped with like services, so that it's not an overwhelming list of things. But let me tell you, every single service category on here, a provider can come to you and say, look, here's the evidence why this saves lives, why this is absolutely necessary. Every single provider can bring dozens upon dozens upon dozens of clients to actually attest, this service category saved my life. I've heard clients say, I don't care how much money you put in primary care, which I would actually automatically think would be everyone's top choice, because what saved my life is actually complementary therapies. And I think when we get down to a small group of people, no matter how large the group actually might end up being, I think what we need to do is to not actually start organizing by our own perspective, which is, I think, the easier thing to do, by our own experience, and saying, these are our essential. These are things that will be great, because just on this list, I mean, that's going to be a problem. You know, that's going to be a real problem. I still remember the battles around complementary therapies and people feeling like, this is incredibly terrible. Now it's actually not being funded by this and by that and by this, and it's actually now considered not essential, while I know it's essential for hundreds of people who go to these agencies. And to me, that's just a really divisive, I'm not saying that you want to do a divisive thing, but that could lead to a very divisive conversation. I could hear that, you know, prior to ACA, I heard a lot about benefits counseling. Well, what do we need? How essential is that? How essential is money management? Is a thing that comes up very regularly amongst consumers. So I think once we start having that conversation, it goes to a place where it's all about my opinion versus your opinion, because we both can bring evidence from our agency, from our development department. So I think I would prefer us to look at things as far as how can we collapse these things, mainly looking at what is the goal of this. The goal of this is to have a document that we can go and say, this is what our model is, and we need to really try to keep this model regardless of how things happen with different funding streams. Ryan White might go down. Ryan White might have eliminated something for complementary therapies. We still think it's essential, etc. You know what I mean?
I was just asking a question.
Oh, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just like, I want to put a passionate comment out there before we potentially even go down that winding path, because many of the groups I've been a part of have gone down that path, and it gets problematic. And it also, oftentimes it just depends on who's around the table, you know? I remember for a long time, before ACA was around, a service category provided by this agency was referral. It was seen as like, well, is that really essential? As we see now with ACA, referral for services and connecting, that's like absolutely essential. So I just think I want the group to be really aware of these kinds of conversations are often weighted by who just happens to be at the table.
DJ?
So I do want to, Chip's idea around, I think we should have a broad, like, this is what we truly believe, and, you know, this is what we have, and this is what we're fighting for. Because if we never set a bar, then, you know, we can't. I think it's a great way to say, hey, this is what we really think we need. We're just asking you guys to maintain and keep these things or expand these things a little bit. And, you know, I just think it's important. Otherwise, we don't have a bar that people are setting.
as I hear it, the argument is if we're so inclusive, it's you know, when it comes to funding, there's going to be a proclivity to say, of course, you know, I want everything I could possibly have too, but we don't have enough money for this. So I guess I'm lost at how we're going to use this. And if this is, in fact, as a suggestion that can be made to support the city in the ways of continuing certain benefits, then by just having broad-based everything under the sun. And again, it's not saying I brought it up to compliment your therapists, I thought it looked great. I just mean, I don't hear a consensus in this group. I mean, I hear everybody talking a little bit different, but I haven't come to a consensus, a sense of consensus.
It's a good thing we don't just have to answer our questions in one meeting.
This is a good starting point, the document that Andy gave us, and that people can take this back to and think about it and think about all the points that have been brought up today. Certainly there are some things that are more evidence-based defensible and some that are less, and some things are broader, some things are more specific. Those are the things that we're going to have to figure out. And I would say that whatever we come up with, we want it to be concise and meaningful.
And as we're moving from essentially the last meeting of the Essential Health Benefits Work Group, we're going to pass a task on to the task force figuring out, hopefully a lot of people will be involved in that task force, we may involve in this discussion so that we can figure out how to frame this and how to move forward with it. It certainly could be too broad and be then detrimental to the future of it.
I agree with Bill that it's important to take some time and think and digest it. It would be nice to have it all wrapped up, but I think it's too complicated.
So then are we at a point where we're saying we're starting with broad, we're not going to approach trying to be more specific about evidence-based versus, and we're just saying, let's just put everything in there, and then we're going to work and close it down somewhat. Because, you know, I need to know how to think about it.
Well, I mean, here's my suggestion. I don't think we come up with a specific directive on how we look at it. We're just receiving this list now. I think we go to what Mark and Bill were saying, and let's just, more than sleep on it, let's really think about this. Let's talk about this with our various people that we work with. Let's, you know, some of us, I know, like myself, I love to combine things and to make lists shorter. I know that's how I'll be looking at it, is how can I still be fair to this list and combining things. Other people might be looking at what's missing or what can be cut out because it's not actually essential. I think we all do that on our own, and then it becomes our topic when we talk about this. I don't think we're going to be able to come up with answers right now on the spot when we've just been introduced to this list.
Well, and then also, you know, looking at the task force and thinking about the next step after really coming up with a with the task force idea of, you know, what is the document that we're going to use to drive our advocacy and to drive the work that helps to ensure what we've created here in San Francisco and what we're expecting from the local or regional and state and federal legislature and funding bodies. What, you know, how is this document then going to drive that work?
Yeah. I think as far as backup in some ways, is as far as like whether you want to call it evidence based on qualitative or quantitative needs assessments or whatever, you know, I think in some ways like we can get that for almost all of these things. but it's important that we actually do be able to. It would be good, like, if in a discussion with that, if someone has a question, well, is complementary therapies actually valuable, that we actually have in our back pocket, well, look, we do actually have a one page of, if you have a question about nutrition, or if you have a question about complementary therapies, or this or that. And if we can't come up with that, I mean, for me, that's a good reason that we cannot be on the list. You know? And some of this we can get because we already have it through needs assessment. Others we'd have to talk to the providers, certainly. But that would be, for me, one way that I would draw a line about something beyond there. There's literally nothing that no one could come up with about why this is valuable. I mean, that's something that's more than I think it's valuable as an individual.
So when I was thinking about this initially, I was thinking that we use the language of the essential health benefits because it's the language of the Affordable Care Act, and it's the language that is being used by folks in decision-making roles. And so it's easier to speak to those folks in the terms that are being understood in usage. One of the things that I think HIV folks have faced all over decades now is this idea of AIDS exceptionalism, and that people with HIV have access to this array of services that aren't available to other folks with other disabling conditions. And instead of the system meeting the needs of those other populations by expanding the services to rise them up to the level of what we have determined to be necessary services, that it's always been the other way. It's always been cutting services so that nobody gets really what they need. And so I've always thought that, you know, we shouldn't accept that people with mental illness don't get access to all of these things. People with mental illness should have access to all of this.
Or cancer.
Yeah, but we could list a number of challenges that would. So part of my intent was to respond to that charge of AIDS exceptionalism and say, this isn't exceptionalism, this is the standard of care. This is what everybody should have. And certainly for this population, we know, based on 30 years of experience, what we need. So that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think I love that. I think we've actually talked about that for years now, about that idea of why do we have to diminish our system? Why can't it be seen as this is a model, it's actually a successful model that we know is successful? Yeah, I love bringing back that argument, sort of repositioning it in that way.
And also, just because something is on the list doesn't mean that every person who has HIV needs that service. I could use money management.
Get mine.
So I think the next step should be that you call the joint task force, and on top of it should be the San Francisco Central topic.
TJ, do you have
a quick thanks for the doodles? Can I go up? Can I suggest that we use this time and the time after it happens the two times?
I think since we met on the third and fourth Wednesday, we might want to include the diversity of Wednesdays, but okay. I certainly wouldn't mind sticking to the two established times.
Yeah.
Does everyone agree? Rather than going off the book with other times,
yeah.
It makes it easier for us. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to ask our mental health person to help us flesh out, because I remember, I'm not sure when I remember this, but this whole discussion about a category called psychosocial support, peer support, those kind of things, and how, you know, should there be categorized together?
No way.
You absolutely do not.
I point out, they're totally different. They're totally different. Mental health is a one-on-one counseling by a licensed professional. Dealing with a set of mental health issues.
But you're doing it by licensing.
It's not just by licensing, but you're also dealing with specific categories of mental health. I forget the actual phrasing, but you're dealing with all of these standards around mental health and psychosocial support. That includes a very broad array of peer-based things, whether it's support groups, whether it's volunteer support, it's also so many.
So even though it's the same agencies, maybe five of the
I know that one agency can only provide both. I know that another agency only provides one.
Which agency only provides one?
Oh, Shanti only provides
psychosocial. Psychosocial, yeah.
Perhaps also why I'm so familiar with the topic. Fortunately, I'm not a loony member.
Okay. Any other comments?
Look at what's going on out there. Anyways, I was thinking after a couple of comments that it could also be an opportunity to continue the advocacy to reduce stigma around substance use and mental health in general, and use this as an additional voice in that conversation, just because those services are never offered at the same level as primary care and other services. And I mean, I don't put you to the fire, but just it's something that we're working so much around, especially around substance use and having the city look at it as a chronic illness versus
I don't see why not. That's something the task force could have weighed in on. And so this is now a new group. So I see no reason why you wouldn't be able to bring that to the table as an agenda item.
Well, thank you everybody for all of your input and thoughts and will. I hope that people come to participate in the task force.
Yes, I echo that.
Continue the discussion and come up with some good things. So, thank you.
So,